This is Talk of the Nation Science Friday. I am Ira Flatow. The military is keeping mum, but rumors have been rampant about a new kind of weapon that the U.S. may use against Iraq, the electromagnetic pulse bomb, or the E-bomb. Now, this bomb is not designed to harm soldiers, but to render any electrical systems in its range useless. It sort of fries the electronics permanently, so that the electronics that control military installations or even weapons would be rendered useless. The technology for this has been around for quite a number of years, but there is a buzz among military technologists that it might be used in an attack on Baghdad. There's also the possibility that a small E-bomb, which some experts say can be made relatively cheaply for a few hundred dollars, might fall into the hands of terrorists who might seek to use them against the cities, knocking out the electrical nerve centers that keep cities functioning. So this hour we're going to talk about whether the wars of the future, even the immediate future, might be conducted on a battlefield of electrical circuitry, thereby sparing loss of human life. In our increasingly digitized society, how will the threat of an E-bomb change our way of life here in big cities? If you want to talk, our number is 1-800-989-8255, 1-800-989-TALKS. So give us a call. We'll be talking the first up this hour about E-bombs. Let me introduce my first guest. Lauren Thompson is the Chief Operating Officer of the Lexington Institute. That's a nonpartisan public policy think tank in Arlington, Virginia. He's an adjunct professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. He joins us from his office in Arlington. Thanks for talking with us.
Hi, Ira.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing fine.
How did you come to study the E-bombs, electromagnetic pulse weapons, and why are they called that?
Well, they're actually called a lot of things. Probably the most appropriate term to use is radio frequency weapon, because what they do is they generate intense energy in the radio frequency part of the spectrum. I think E-bombs or high-powered microwaves are somewhat less precise terms that have come into popular usage.
Mm-hmm. And how do they work?
Well, the basic idea is that a pulse of electromagnetic energy in frequencies similar to those where radios, telephones, televisions, and so on operate, an intense pulse or beam is generated. And because the equipment can't handle that level of energy, you get a variety of effects from degradation to outright destruction.
Now, we've known about this. I remember from the early days of nuclear weapons, we knew that you blew up an atomic bomb, it gave off a big electromagnetic pulse, but are we talking here about nuclear weapons?
We are not talking about nuclear weapons. This is sort of like a nuclear weapon, except that all the other effects are missing. What you get is a large and potentially indiscriminate burst of electromagnetic energy, but no other type of radiation, no blast effect, and relatively little heat.
So this would this random magnetic frequency energy would overwhelm any electronic devices and sort of fry them.
Well, that's the basic idea, but there are three levels of effect. It depends on how much energy reaches the equipment and how well protected it is. At the lowest or most minor level of effect, you get temporary upset. That would be sort of like jamming the equipment, the sort of effect you would get, for example, when you hear lightning on your radio. At a higher level of intensity, you get a permanent upset, such as the erasure of memory or logic on a chip. And then finally, you get what you were referring to, a burnout. You've literally fried the circuits. They fuse, they're smoking, and they can never be used again.
So what prevents this from spreading to friendly forces, to actually harming yourself?
Well, therein lies the biggest problem with the weapons. They may be non-lethal, but they are not particularly precise. Because it's electromagnetic energy operating in the radio frequency part of the spectrum, any conductive conduit that it comes into contact with, electrical wires, telephone wires, maybe even water mains, will transmit it to places you weren't expecting.
Which could also be it could be civilian areas, I imagine. You could stop equipment in hospitals, things like that?
Well, that's what the big debate is in the Pentagon right now. The Air Force Research Laboratory at Kirtland Air Force Base has in New Mexico has for a number of years had half a dozen such projects under development. Some of them are burst weapons, which are really quite indiscriminate. Some of them are beam weapons. But the problem is that although they can aim the beam devices fairly precisely, once they hit the ground, it's hard to know where the energy is going to go.
So give us a scenario. If there is a war in the Persian Gulf, how might this weapon be used?
Well, perhaps the most appealing possibility is to deal with deeply buried underground bunkers, say, for example, where key command authorities or weapons of mass destruction are located. As I believe you've reported in the past, there is a move afoot within the Pentagon to develop a new generation of nuclear weapons to dig those sorts of bunkers out of the ground. An attractive alternative would be to use electromagnetic pulse, in other words, to use these types of radio frequency weapons in order to channel a high-energy pulse into the underground bunker. What that would do is it would shut down the ventilation and the other forms of electricity and thus make the bunker useless to the people who are in it, perhaps not impossible to even open without using any type of munition.
Could there be a poor man's version, a terrorist version of this E-bomb?
Yeah, I'm afraid so. And in fact, because the technology is relatively simple, the United States is far from being the only country that understands or could construct it. In fact, the technology seems to have originated in Russia during the 1970s. That kind of poor man's device generates a conventional explosive, which then in turn can be converted into an electromagnetic field and put out, at least for nanosecond periods of time, very, very intense bursts of energy.
So it would be a very interesting terrorist weapon in a large city.
Yes, it would. And as I have speculated elsewhere, I think that maybe the reason why this technology is so classified has less to do with how complex it is than with how potentially destructive it could be to us.
Mm-hmm. You don't want to give those secrets away.
No, I'm not particularly interested in doing that.
But you don't think there is much secret to be had here either.
No, because, in fact, the basic principle of the weapon was first uncovered in 1925 by Arthur Compton in a scientific paper. Really, what we're talking about here is a very high-power radio transmitter. It sends out waves in the radio frequency part of the spectrum, the same place where almost all digital electronics would operate. But it does it in such a manner and such a degree of intensity that the type of equipment we have in digital electronics is very susceptible to upset.
What about protecting their own weaponry and their own soldiers in any kind of war situation? Are they developing, you have the point and the counterpoint, the defense against it?
Well,
is there any way to do that?
It is possible, but it is prohibitively expensive. In the most absurd situation, you can protect your computer. There's only one problem. It's in a lead-lined safe. There is no cheap and easy way of guarding against these devices. And let me give you an example of the fix that potentially such weapons put us in. During the 1990s, as the information revolution gained steam, the American military services increasingly went to the commercial sector rather than to military contractors for electronics because they wanted the benefits of all this new technology as soon as possible. In the process, they began to write all of the nuclear hardening specifications out of their systems architecture, a lot of the things that were called military specifications. So what's the result? We have a military now that is heavily dependent upon networks that are remarkably vulnerable to even the smallest amounts of trace electromagnetic energy.
And that's and so we have a real Achilles heel here.
It could be that, yes.
And so with someone with a small amount of technical knowledge and creating something that from what I understand, could actually multiply through a system like a dominoes effect?
Yes. The peculiarity of these systems is because they are generating photons of electromagnetic energy, whatever medium they come into contact with, it can conduct that electricity as potentially a way of sending it other places you hadn't anticipated. And so you get this peculiar consequence where you shoot a beam at a target. It undoubtedly affects the target. And then 100 yards away, nothing has happened. But half a mile away, something does. Because the power lines or the telephone lines have carried it to that remote location.
Let's get some calls in here. Let's go to Herb in Bridgeton, New Jersey. Hi, Herb.
Hi there. Thank you for letting me talk to you.
Go ahead.
I have a very serious question. This is supposed to be non-lethal technology, and yet I'm thinking, what about people walking around with pacemakers?
Herb, that's a good point. People in iron lungs, people with pacemakers, people in the midst of surgery when the lights go out will not regard this as non-lethal. People who are driving in cars at high speed when the ignition system goes out also will not regard it as non-lethal. You know, the concept of non-lethality, which is really different from these weapons, but is increasingly popular within the Pentagon, is more of an aspiration than a guaranteed goal. The idea is to try to win wars without doing a great deal of civilian casualties or infrastructure damage, but you can't guarantee that outcome.
Okay, Herb, thanks for calling.
All right, thank you.
Reminds me of the neutron bomb. Remember that years ago?
Well, yeah, exactly right. Except, of course, as you know, the thing about the neutron bomb is that it was supposed to kill people and leave structures standing. This is nearly the reverse of that.
Yeah, yeah. 1-800-989-8255 is our number. Could you not make small versions of this that could work very locally? You know, maybe if you want to take out a tank, you have a hand grenade that has a little bit of this that would work just...
Well, potentially, yes. You know, the way in which the weapon works is it sends out a burst of energy, and of course the energy dissipates very quickly if it's bursting in every direction. So you would potentially have a very small device, something that could be carried by a person that would create a local burst that would disable everything for, let's say, 100 yards. But beyond that, not only would not be discernible by people, but in fact would have no particular effect on electronics. Mm.
Don in Miami, hi, welcome to Science Friday.
Hello.
How's the weather there today?
Oh, it's great. Yeah. Just a little bit of cloudy, but we're hot.
I was afraid of that.
Feels like summer already. Anyway, I wanted to ask whether this magnetic pulse technology is effective against vacuum tube circuitry and... is the circuitry in some of these countries like Middle East or North Korea vacuum tube-based like Russia was, which made, in the Cold War, the United States much more vulnerable to electromagnetic field pulse than they were?
That's a very perceptive question. In general, the older and more obsolete electronic equipment is, the less susceptible it is to electromagnetic pulse. It's been estimated that solid-state integrated circuits are a million times more susceptible to this sort of weapon than a vacuum tube of two generations ago would have been. What has happened is that as we have entered the digital age, we have created smaller and smaller, denser and denser types of integrated circuits that are very, very sensitive to excess voltage. They can't work off the heat, they can't cope with the voltage, and as a consequence they fail, sometimes even from things like static electricity. Vacuum tubes are grosser, they're more rugged and durable, and as a consequence they're less susceptible to this weapon.
Right, Don, thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
So are we totally vulnerable now? Our military isn't so dependent on high-tech electronics?
You know,
they must be thinking about this themselves.
They probably aren't thinking about it as much as they should. Like a lot of other threats, including 9/11, things just don't seem to be a serious threat until they happen, and then everybody crowds through the door called new threat. This is a concept that has been understood for decades by physicists, but which has never been actually used in combat, and as a consequence has never been focused on by the military to any great degree. In fact, when they had the only set of open source hearings that were done on this before the Joint Economic Committee of the Congress in 1998, they brought up the head of Pentagon operational testing, and he frankly admitted that they didn't know the degree of our vulnerability because they were just starting to test for it.
Hmm. All right, we'll keep an eye on it. Thank you very much for joining us, Lauren.
My pleasure, Ira.
Lauren Thompson is the Chief Operating Officer of the Lexington Institute. That's in Arlington, Virginia, and he's Adjunct Professor in the Center for Peace and Security Studies at Georgetown University. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, we're going to take a look at a new treatment for a damaged heart that uses stem cells. Stay with us. I'm Ira Flatow, and this is Talk of the Nation, Science Friday from NPR News.